This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 604, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Spent the day in bed, very happy I did. Yes, I spent the day in bed as the work. I spent the day in bed. I'm not my type, but I love my bed. And I recommend that you stop watching the news, because the news contrives to frighten you.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy's Pick of the Week podcast, episode 604. I'm Josh Flanagan, along with my co-host Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
You made it out.
I did it.
All right. And Ron Richards.
So relieved Connor's okay.
Again. How many times are we going to let him do this to us?
Listen, we're just living on the edge, Connor, every week.
I've really changed this time.
Things are going to be different.
And this time, I mean it. We are iFanboy. Every week we read our stack of comics, and we mean it. And one of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books, stuff from the week, books. The call, we'll talk about the patron pick. There may be a corner. I don't even know. I haven't looked down the schedule that far. Or the script, that's the word.
Wow.
DB, I'm telling you.
Did you just wake up?
I mean, in a way, I'm never waking up. If we have time, we will read some listener mail, and then we're going to riff on that. That's kind of what we do. That's giving away something that'll be fun. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There will be spoilers. We'll talk about what happens in the books. If you haven't read them, that's your own fault. Come back after you have, or be forewarned. Connor, you had the pick.
This week, the pick was Detective Comics 965. And did you guys, like, in your early 20s or maybe your teens, ever have a girlfriend who simultaneously drove you nuts but also thrilled you?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Josh, you did too. I know you did.
I know. You said early 20s, and I was like, it doesn't matter since then. And then I was like, things happened before that.
That was Detective Comics 965 for me, written by James Tynion in the IV and drawn by Eddie Barrows. This is the first part of A Lonely Place of Living, which is a homage to A Lonely Place of Dying, which is a storyline that introduced Tim Drake way back in the 90s. And cover is a homage.
That's an insider reference.
Fun fact, I was gifted that series for Christmas one year when part of my great family just walked into a comic shop going, my kid likes comics. And I would get random DC books for Christmas. And I'd go, oh, these are great. Thanks.
That was my first Batman issue.
The first part?
Batman. Or I don't even think it was part two. By the way, I've been following the tradition for a long time. The first one I picked up was part two. Go me.
So not the issue that was on the homage on the cover?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, that was the storyline that introduced Tim Drake. So as we've been following along, we've all thought Tim Drake has been dead But we knew he was alive, but the characters thought he was dead. Batman was told he was alive recently. He's been searching for him. So here we finally get some time with Tim Drake, who is under the care of Mr. Oz, who we all know is groaningly Jor-El. Which is interesting because, and it's also the really great variant cover in which Tim Drake is inside the Kryptonian rings, which looks like from Superman 2. Did anybody else read this?
Nope.
Okay, I wonder how much explaining I had to do. All right,
Listen, Connor, you've got a lot of explaining to do.
I'm going to go page by page, panel one.
Now I remember that, like Tim Drake had been spirited away by something or someone, and then they just kind of left it there, and everybody thought he was dead. So there's been no progress on that front since then.
Well, we have seen him in like a prison and being held by the mysterious cloaked character Mr. Oz a little bit here and there, but we haven't really spent much time with him.
Who was revealed 2 weeks ago in a Superman comic.
Right, to be Jor-El, and he is also revealed as such here. So what we get here is they retell the origin of Tim Drake as Mr. Oz and him have a discussion about who he is in relation to the world. And it's basically the same origin from his original origin, although they've replaced the memories with the terrible costumes. And there's even like some redrawn panels and pages, including... If you guys remember that very first page we saw him in the Neil Adams redesigned costume that Norm Brayfogle drew where after he had finally gotten the Robin suit with the fist up in the air.
Yeah.
We even get a redrawn page of that with a slightly different costume.
It was a good costume. That was a good redesign.
It was. And also, in the background, we have the tubes holding the old costumes, including the old original Robin costume, which, again, not in this continuity, but whatever. Who cares? Nothing makes sense. Nothing matters.
I love that this is like, it just keeps you up at night, doesn't it?
I do like that.
Yeah. It does. And being angry about it was part of the enjoyment I had. When I finished reading this issue, I was really sort of frustrated, but also really found it interesting and thrilling and fun. And so therefore, it was the one that had me the most excited. So
engaged.
Most of this comic is literally a conversation between Jor-El and Tim Drake as they go through his life. And then at the end... Tim hacks the computer and frees himself from the spinning discs, you know, that the Kryptonians use for prison in the movies.
Frees
himself and then by accident opens up all the prison cells when he's trying to open up one of them and frees who he thinks is Batman. Turns out it is him from the future as Batman, even though he claims he was never going to be Batman.
Da-da-da.
And then they both accidentally open up a cell holding Doomsday, which I rolled my eyes at. But Doomsday versus Batman and Robin is an interesting story because I've never seen that. So,
which is, in 2017, surprising.
Right. Also, another continuity problem which kept me up at night last night was that we were told in the New 52 that Tim Drake was never Robin, if you recall, that he was Red Robin. Because
I literally don't recall.
He wouldn't take the Robin moniker because he thought it was disrespectful to Jason.
Yes.
Although here we see him in a regular Robin costume being called Robin in the flashbacks. So, again, nothing makes sense, nothing matters. But we can all agree that the double R on the chest is stupid.
Is that our next t-shirt? Nothing makes sense, nothing matters?
Maybe, possibly. really great art by Eddie Barrows. He's terrific. I've always been a big fan of his.
Yeah.
And just a really great... conversation about the character of Tim Drake, a character that has, I think we can also all agree, been really underserved in the last 6 years. Yep. He's a character that a lot of fans grew up with, came into comics for a lot of fans, rightly or wrongly, he's their Robin, and he has been shunted to the side in favor of Damian. I know for a fact there are people at DC who do not like Damian and hate having to write him and don't understand why DC is pushing him. You get the sense here that James Tynion in the IV feels that way as well, because there's a lot of affection here for Tim Drake and his history and his character. And it is unfortunate that he is not the Robin, you know, despite the fact that he's wearing the Robin costume.
Right.
And so it made me happy to return to a time, because those were great comics, and to a time where Tim Drake was Robin. Even though Dick Grayson's my Robin always and forever.
Not my Robin.
Damian, it's sad to know you'll never get back to a place where Tim Drake is the primary sidekick, because he worked really well with Batman. He was a nice foil to Batman. He wasn't Dick Grayson. He was very computer minded. He was a great detective, which is something that Dick Grayson never was. And he was pleasant to be around, unlike Damian. So
the vitriol for Damian, which is
the worst thing Grant Morrison ever did.
I was going to say, which is funny because he, you know, Grant is, I mean, Connor, if you have to look back on the Grant Morrison Batman years, are you pro or con them?
I'm pro them because we liked Damian at the time, and then they got rid of him because Grant Morrison ended his story, and he was such a specifically Grant Morrison creation, and it worked in the context of the story that he was telling. And then the story ended, and he killed off Damian.
I remember those first two or three issues of whatever the Batman series those first two or three issues were perfect issues. Those are like legendary single issues.
Yep.
But yeah, since then.
It's just that, you know, DC never met a thing they wouldn't run into the ground, and they for some reason had to bring him back and have him be the primary Robin, even though it ruins everything. But here, for one brief moment anyway, you get to have Tim Drake in the spotlight. And well, obviously they're bringing him back. Batman's looking for him. He's alive now. He's escaped. He'll make his way back into the fold. And so people who've been missing Tim Drake, people who are Tim Drake fans who haven't really gotten a chance to really enjoy him as a character in the last 6 years, should read this issue, because you get like classic Tim Drake here, despite the double R in his chest. I feel like there's a better way to show a double R. You know, maybe a little drop shadow.
Oh, look at who brought the designer.
Hello.
This is a great Tim Drake issue. He uses his smarts. He uses his computer skills. This is the guy you remember being. Cool. And plus there was always that tension, even in the old days when he didn't want to be Batman. He didn't want to live like Batman. He didn't want to have that future. But there was always the idea that he would end up being that Batman. And we would see that often in future stories where he would somehow end up being Batman. And here it's sort of,
I always like that.
Yeah.
Because it made sense in the fact that it didn't, like, you can't get away from your destiny. Whereas, I mean, I know Dick Grayson isn't going to, Dick Grayson's one of the only characters to be able to transition that way to a different character, different superhero character, more or less, and have it stick and work. Now, that happened 40 years ago, so it's not like we haven't had time to live with it. But I like that he seems to be the most obvious choice for going to be Batman, but he was never going to be a Batman. He was for a little bit, but you know what I mean? And that sort of story of Tim being on that trajectory while being so different than Batman was always really interesting.
So. Yeah, and so it was nice to see them return to that, where he's like, yep, I'm you from the future, ha-ha. it was a really great, if partially infuriating issue, but that's fine. I think emotional reactions are a good thing when you're reading something. You don't have to love everything that happens in a comic.
It's getting to be fun now for us, because we can just be like, oh, here's a stupid thing that we can complain about.
So, Detective 965, if you're a Tim Drake fan, it's a must read.
Hey, can we rearrange this a little and go right into Action Comics since it's related?
Sure. Yes.
Wow. I don't have a ton. Well,
on the fly.
Go for it. Yeah, it's fun.
Good thing we're professionals, Josh.
Action Comics number 988 by Dan Jurgens and Ryan Sook. By the way, more Ryan Sook in everyone's lives would be great.
That's agreed.
How do you this Jor-El thing seems stupid.
Yes.
And also that we just did it. Like the Manchester Black thing, it's just like a mysterious man in the hood is a different character. And it's Jor-El, like, they're not going to really make it Jor-El. Like, I don't believe it. And actually, before Manchester Black, it was whoever Mitch's Pitlick. So it was the mystery of who is Clark Kent. And it is the mystery of this. And the, like, how many times are we going to do that?
A lot of is it Mystery Comics or Action Comics?
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I will say this. Between this comic and Detective Comics, you had a lot of Mr. Oz. And there is clearly a giant flashing light saying there's someone behind all this. And I have to only assume it's Dr. Manhattan. Because somebody pulled him out of Krypton before it blew up, and then someone sent him to Earth, and someone zapped him out in Detective. So you can only assume that because he showed up in that DC Rebirth issue for the first time, and that was all about Watchmen. Again, I know that everyone is Watchmen paranoid, but I have to believe that this is all Dr. Manhattan's doing, because it's all about Superman versus Dr. Manhattan in that storyline that's coming up. So
yeah,
I have to believe at the end of the day, this is all Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, but this is... It's just like, I feel like Superman was going in a direction.
Yes, no, I agree with you. This is stupid. This is totally stupid. It looks really stupid.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's not even not comics, but I keep, like, we've talked about Superman more in the last 2 years, a year and a half, since we have in forever. But half the time it's like, what are you doing? You're on a good pace, and then you got to do this. But at the same time, like, I don't know. It's kind of like a 70s story. I can't really fault them for it.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. I just don't like. I think there's certain sacred cows in comics, as much as we often say there aren't any. But like, you don't fuck with Jor-El. You know,
that's kind of what. Yeah,
you don't fuck with Jor-El. Listen,
I mean, Superman's origin is sort of sacrosanct. You don't bring back Jor-El as an asshole.
And that's why I don't buy it. Like, we're getting that a lot lately. Is that a thing that's always happened where, like, a revered character from the past comes back or a current one becomes an asshole? Like, that's the new thing. I mean, we had to sit through it with Steve Rogers. We've had, you know, we got to do it over and over again with, you just said, Tim Drake from the future comes up and pretty much laughs at his current.
No, that was me.
I know.
He was using a gun, so we'll say that.
Well, there you go. There's this, I don't know, it's like we keep tearing down the heroes over and over again. In a way, I feel like
in particular with Captain America and Superman, modern creators are uncomfortable having straight up heroes. They have to tear them down a little bit.
You think they are, or I don't know? Is it like some punk rock ethos? Is it they think the audience doesn't want that, or like they just go straight? I don't know. It's happening over and over though. It's interesting, not necessarily good.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't buy this at face value. God, I hope it's not at face value, but
I mean, even if it is, it isn't permanent, but it just means we're sitting through it, and I don't know.
He also has really annoying hair.
He looks really bad. That being said, like,
I'm glad you're focused on the important things.
I still think that, like, this Dan Jurgens, I don't want to say revival, but he's been fun to have there, because at least it just doesn't feel like everything else. It feels like everything else that used to be.
He writes the character really well. I mean, Superman's good in this issue. It's just the other stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's a flashback to his grandfather, and I was like, oh no, are they laying the groundwork for the Krypton TV show? Because it's about Superman's grandfather. But then
I keep forgetting that exists.
But then Superman's grandfather here is a super asshole. So I was like, maybe not. Maybe not.
Is that a new thing?
Yeah, there's a show on Sci-Fi Network called Krypton.
No, I mean, I don't know if I know about history of Superman's family.
I don't really know much about it either.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know who would know? Mark Waid. Not that that helps us at all right now, but I'm pretty sure.
Busiek.
Him too.
Yep.
It was weird for sure.
Yep.
Okay. Right. Okay, I just wanted to confirm that we're in the same place.
Are you guys done with DC Corner?
Well, it sounds like, looks like that next corner is really going to, we're going to be socked in here for a while.
This happened to Marvel Legacy. I fell asleep in the middle of it. Not because it was boring, it was because I started reading it late at night and not realizing it was 60 pages.
Yeah.
And I did that at some point. And I tapped the screen to see the page count, and I was like, oh.
I will admit I failed with Marvel Legacy number one in not being prepared for what it was before opening up the comic. Because I didn't realize that this was, this is the big book that is setting the plate for everything to come. I thought it was like the next Civil War II number one or Secret Empire.
Me too.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And the thing is, Marvel's done this before where they put out a big book that is like, this is the table set. Like, I feel like Marvel Now had one of these or whatever, where you got all the different artists showing the different directions the whole universe is going to go in. Had I known that up front, I probably wouldn't have been as annoyed when the art went from Esad Ribic to anyone else, because
holy shit,
was that art good?
When you originally heard about it, it was Jason Aaron and Esad Ribic doing Marvel Legacy number one, and I too thought it was the post whatever you know event reset or the miniseries reset. So yeah. I was all excited for it, and then you're right. Once it switched, I mean, it switched to Somni, it switched to Dowderman, it switched to Alex Maleev. I mean, Suter Eminent. These aren't slouches.
No, yeah.
But I was disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that's what it was. And it stung even more because the Esad Ribic stuff just looked so, like, I'll admit, like, when I heard about the prehistoric Avengers or whatever Jason dreamt up for this, I despite my predilection for Mr. Aaron's work and enjoyment of what he's done at Marvel to this date and personal relationship, I rolled my eyes a little bit and I was like, oh, come on, whatever. But like those first few pages of this, I was like, this is great. I want to know where this is going. And then to have it switch gears to Steve McNiven or, you know, even to people who I like Jim Chung and Eminem and Somni and stuff like that. I was like, oh, I just want the Ribic story. I want that. I want this. But that said, I was very curious what you guys thought of the few Somni pages of Captain America that we saw, because I hate to say it, but called it.
What did you call?
The future of Steve Rogers is be Captain America earning back the trust of America.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. Well, that's like you called that the sun was going to come up the next morning.
The sun's coming up tomorrow, Connor. Connor, the sun's coming up tomorrow.
It was one page.
We don't know that.
Yeah, I mean, that's not... We talked about it before. I'm not super looking forward to that. I wish they just started clean slate, but they can't do that. Right. This was a mixed bag, as you would expect. It's 60 pages, lots of different short stories. I mean, so we see that young Wolverine is back, which I didn't expect to happen.
And I didn't expect to happen either, and of all people to do it, it makes sense that Jason did it, considering his history with Wolverine and stuff like that. You know? I mean, I guess he was inside the statue?
Well, it wasn't a statue. Remember, he had a liquid adamantium poured on him.
Oh, right. That's what it was. You're right. Okay, yeah.
So we had that.
I tried to block that out, by the way. I really thought that we were stuck with Old Man Logan for a long time. I'm very surprised they went in this direction.
We have some sort of reformed Fantastic Four, although only with the Thing and Human Torch. Then we have Mr. Fantastic and Invisible Woman some off in space with their kids, although we never see the Mr. Fantastic. I don't understand that part.
Yeah. That's the big mystery, is that they're off seeing other universes in the multiverse. But I thought the multiverse was gone. Like that's a little confusing. So
multiverse is never gone. It's never far from our hearts.
Never gone. So.
I mean, it was enjoyable, but you know, as you said, it was an overview of things to come. So,
right,
like
it's a taste of the future of Marvel, basically.
Right, it wouldn't have been pick of the week because it was all over the map. But there were things in here I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed sequences, as you said, all the stuff with Issa Rybick I really liked.
Yeah.
Even though I don't really have any connection to some of those characters.
Yeah.
But some of these things I didn't even know what I was looking at, like the Jarvis one page.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't sure what that was supposed to mean.
Well, I think that's the point, though, is that it's supposed to pique your curiosity, so you go.
No, I totally get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, like, it's a mixed bag. You know, like Issa Rybick, amazing. Maliv, great. You know, Akuna was great to see. Jim Chung, great to see. Eminem, great. You know, even Ed McGuinness. Yeah. You know, but Dowderman, I like. Yeah. I mean, the Greg Land, the Diodato pages had me kind of. You know, I'm like, oh, that doesn't look so great. But it's Marvel. It's what to expect. But I for me, it was the Rybick. I mean, the Rybick stuff just looked like next level, like European stuff. I mean, I know.
So is that going to be a book?
I think so. I think that's the major thing that Jason's been working on.
Okay, then I will read that because that was fun.
Yeah. So.
So how do you feel about? I mean, before we get into the generation stuff, how do you feel about the future of Marvel with reading all these things?
Future looks bright, Connor. Let me tell you that.
I'm more interested in a lot of this than I have been reading Marvel lately.
Yeah, so. No, I think the. I mean, I don't want to lean into the guy in his 40s who's been reading comics since his 80s stereotype, but
right.
go you know like
because, embrace it.
Right, but because like because I don't want to dismiss some of the other edgier books that have caught criticism over the past couple of years. You know, the Squirrel Girls and Wasp and what have you and all stuff like that, because I think there was some good stuff in there. There was some questionable stuff in there as well, too, but there's questionable stuff with the average 40-something-year-old comic fan superhero art, too. You know, so it, as long as it's good, I'm happy. But this definitely had me, for 60 pages, which is a lot, it had me more excited than not excited. You know, like there wasn't a ton in here that I was rolling my eyes at.
So there are 53 books on the Marvel checklist at the end.
Yeah, I saw that checklist, and I almost did a spit take.
I could have not read it.
You obviously could have.
I mean,
yeah, I don't think it was.
Well, I'm gonna read what I was gonna read from that anyway.
Right.
Like there was nothing there that I was kind of like, oh, I'm watching a commercial here for stuff that I was gonna do anyway, which I tend to not do.
Right.
So it was fine, I guess, but yeah.
All right. But the one good thing is that it also coincides with the wrapping up of the Generations event, which I believe is now over with these last two books, right, Connor?
So these are the last two.
I believe these are the last two.
A bunch of stuff ended this week. Infamous Iron Man ended this week. We're going to talk about Nick Fury in a minute. Ended this week. Last week, all new Guardians of the Galaxy ended. Like, there's a lot of Marvel books wrapping up.
We talked about this last week when you weren't on the show, but we're in that weird never space of Marvel where Secret Empire ended, Legacy is just beginning, and so we're getting weird kind of like last week had a bunch of like non-story driven transitional one-shot issues for a couple books, you know, like Infamous Iron Man was one and Avengers was another one, you know. Last week's Avengers was just like they paired off into twos and were talking about life, and it was just like it's the, you know, the space filler issues, and I guess with this week the story is a lot of stuff ending, but the Generations event finally comes to an end and just continues to baffle.
Yeah, especially, I mean, we had Generations Miles Morales : Spider-Man and Peter Parker : Spider-Man, and then we had Generations Sam Wilson : Captain America and Steve Rogers : Captain America. They should have figured out which name would come first in which title. But Spider-Man was cool because Ramon Perez drew it.
That was great. That was the highlight of the whole thing.
But that's about all I can say about that.
Here's my problem about the entire Generations event, right? And I'll glad, you know, like this is the whole thing, is that if you're going to do an event where the premise is that a handful of heroes get snatched at a time and visit their predecessors or whatever at various points in times, that's fine. That's a cool concept. But you need to take it a step further and write the rules and have the rules be consistent throughout them. So both of these books suffered in the Spider-Man book, Miles blinks into the past and he's in 60s garb.
Right.
Right, when no other character changed the way they looked. They all popped it as they looked at the moment it happened. So, like, why did that happen, right?
But they're also in 60s garb, but in a world with cell phones and other
things. Right, yeah. Well, that's the ever-changing window of the Marvel history, right? I mean, I care less about the cell phones. I care more about the fact that his costume, he was wearing 60s clothes over his costume. How did that work? Like, it doesn't line up with their books.
You can't.
If it turns out to be the Beyonder, then I will eat my hat. So I will say bravo, well played, Marvel sir, well played. Because
I'm looking through the Spider-Man book and it looked really great.
It looked beautiful.
Good Perez. Good Perez. But again, I just don't know what we're supposed to learn here other than, you know, Peter showed his. Is less confident side to Miles and show that it was okay to be scared, is okay to be uncertain.
I guess.
I guess that was the lesson he learned from it. But again, I don't know the point. Like for the Falcon one, for the Captain America one.
Well, so moving on to
an entire lifetime.
Well, that's the thing. So moving on to Captain America, the problem here was that Sam Wilson goes back to World War II and meets young Steve Rogers, which is fine and like and all stuff. But then he stays and lives an entire life to the point where he sees himself as a younger self as Falcon. And at that point, I just threw my hands up and go, well, what? Nothing matters. Nothing. What is the phrase? Nothing matters. Nothing makes sense. Nothing, right?
Yeah. Well, right? That's
like, how does that work?
Yeah. When he started to age, I was like, wait a minute. What? Because everyone else had hung around for maybe a day, a couple hours.
Right.
This was like he fought the entire war.
Lived the life. Becomes a minister. Right.
Gets involved in the civil rights movement. I was just like, what am I, what?
It was a nice story. Like, if you just handed me this comic and it's like, oh, wow, that's a nice Falcon story. Like, it had all this kind of tones of it as the last chapter of Generations. It made no sense whatsoever because that did not happen to any of the other heroes. Why did he not go back? Why? Right. And at what point, when everyone went back to the moment in time, it breaks the laws of fucking quantum fit, like quantum time travel. like he snapped, he went back into the past. He had to go back. He never went back.
Just let him go, Connor. Let him go. that's wow.
It was weird. He only goes back once he dies of old age.
Yeah. He doesn't go back. So technically, Falcon never doesn't exist, but he watched himself become Falcon and become Captain America, which makes no sense.
Well, he goes back at the very end and he's being interrogated about Kobik.
Yeah.
For the last couple of pages, and then he gives the shield back to Steve. But
does he go back when he dies?
Yeah, once he dies of old age in the past.
Oh, that's when he goes back. Okay, all right.
I liked it all. That was for nothing.
Yeah.
Ron, he leaps back in time.
Okay, got it.
And he rejoins. Dr. Samuel Beckett, but
he's the Dark Leaper.
But yeah, now this one, it got increasingly more ridiculous as as the pages went on. I was like, wait, he's still there. Yeah. He's still there.
It's just so weird. And so like, that's the thing, is that like, I get the concept of this, of the generations and stuff like that. The problem is that you got to write the rules and everyone's got to stick to it. That's my biggest complaint about it.
Yeah.
So
what a weird event.
What a weird event. So, well,
didn't
all over
read
now.
A word of it.
So moving
but
on.
I really enjoyed you two talking about it.
It was so weird.
I'll be honest, I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss it.
So, quick break to tell you how you can help iFanboy. We've got the t-shirt store, which is at ifanboy.threadless.com, Josh.
Yes.
We've got five designs at the t-shirt store. Two are the classic shirts, the iFanboy shirt and the Herm shirt. We've got three new shirts, the Pick of the Week podcast shirt, the rating shirt, and our brand new t-shirt, the If One Is Electro shirt. And we'll have more shirts coming throughout the years to come. quick note, guys. I was listening to last week's show.
Yeah.
And we got to this portion of the show, and you were talking about how great the Electro shirt was, and I couldn't help but agree. And then Ron, you threw off a little side comment about how the person that designed that shirt should be commended. And I was like, oh, he's going to say something nice about me. And then he proceeded to take full credit for designing the Electro shirt when I'm standing here holding the sketch I made.
No. I meant the actual. Yes. I meant the actual.
I have a sketch of the Electro shirt.
No, I know that. No, kudos to you for the concept. I was referring to the person who we paid to actually do it in design. I meant the actual mechanical of it. Connor,
can I just
good idea?
Can I just go ahead and say I got my Electro shirt this week?
Yes.
I went with the Tri-Blend Cotton. Love that shirt. That's a good shirt.
They make some good shirts.
I was very overall, I was like, that's a good shirt. I was happy to wear it. It was
team effort, Connor. Bravo to all of us. We all did a good job.
I didn't do a thing. I said, yep, no. Yep.
Hey, Josh, that's management.
I know. Actually, I believe what I said was, well, this is stupid. but again, not in a bad way, and I think I communicated that effectively.
Yeah.
iFanboy.threadless.com. Also, iFanboy.com/support. That's where you find our Amazon link as we start wheeling away into the holiday season. I'm sure there's already commercials for Christmas shopping. You can do your Amazon shopping via that page. You can make that link your dedicated link on your browser. Never think about it again. And we think everybody does that. Lots and lots of people do that every year. And it really helps us out. You can also, on that page, find a direct donation link for PayPal for eccentric billionaires, or even, let's face it, 100 millionaires. We'll take your end-of-the-year tax shelter money.
We are not discerning. We will not look a gift horse in the mouth.
So you can do that all at family.com.
We do not want horses.
And finally,
good clarification. Thank you, Josh.
That's true. It ends up being more expensive than it's worth. Also, finally, patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where we become a patron. And we're about $400 away from unlocking the next thing, which is the non-comics media podcast. And if you're a patron, you get your own superpower. You get to have some fun prizes. You get to hang out in the monthly hangout, which is happening very soon. We'll talk about it at the end of the show. And you get to vote every week in the patron pick. So there's lots of fun things happening at patreon.com/iFam.
Important note for the patrons, all patron rewards up to this show have been mailed out. So if you do not receive, for those of you who are waiting on your rewards, there's only a handful of you. There are only, since the last round, there wasn't a lot, which I was hoping for more. Give me more work. But if you don't receive your rewards within the next week, then they're lost in the mail. Get in touch, and we'll hook you up. We'll take care of it. But everyone who's been waiting for it, you've been patient. You're awesome. It's coming. Sealed with a kiss.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thank you very much.
All right.
Wonder Woman 31. This is the first issue. James Robinson taking over the book with art by Carlo.
The New World Order. Sorry, Carlo.
Pagulian? That guy.
Yeah, he was a big Hulk artist back in the day.
Pagoyan.
Yeah. Bogovich? Chicago?
Blagojevich.
Yeah.
Carlo Blagojevich on art. This was the best issue of Wonder Woman in this volume by far.
Wow.
By far.
Wow.
It's Rucka's favorite thing to do, and Rucka we like a lot, but is not connected historically on that character.
In the last arc, the less said, the better. This was a fun Wonder Woman as a superhero story. I mean, imagine that. Also, I was really shocking that it took them this long after that movie came out. Like, one of the biggest movies of the year. You know, everyone's talking about it. And then to go into that arc they had previously was a real shocker. But here you have finally high quality people on art and writing. And here we have, did you guys read this?
No.
No.
We had Hercules, also the daughter, I mean, the son of Zeus. So we've established now that Wonder Woman is the daughter of Zeus. So Hercules is technically her brother, but he's living in the Pacific Northwest alone in a cabin, wants to be left alone. But Darkseid's daughter shows up and kills him and takes his life force and goes to the Darkseid baby and injects him with it. And now he's a Darkseid teenager.
Oh, Jesus. So
I
miss Darkseid baby already. I just got to know Darkseid baby.
Also, there's a cameo from Hercule Poirot for all those classic mystery fans.
Oh, wow.
So James Robinson writing on brand.
So
I just hate that he's always trying to come up with something to get the kids interested.
So now we see that this story is that Darkseid's daughter is going around killing the old gods in order to steal their life force and power the new gods.
Right. I like that.
Her father, Darkseid. So really, really awesome comic up there in the running for pick of the week. Really good stuff.
Cool. Well, it's like James Robinson Wonderama because we had the last issue of Nick Fury this week.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. But,
yeah, neither did I. Yeah.
But then I thought, yeah, that makes sense.
Right. Like, this concept of these little one-shots of Nick Fury, like, this was a good little ending. This will be a good trade paperback. And honestly, if they had done this when Nick Fury's son was first introduced, I probably would have been less vitriolic towards the character. Because it gave a sense of legacy. It gave a sense, ironically, it gave a sense of connection to Nick Fury and all that sort of stuff. And not to mention, like, someone recently asked me why I'm frustrated about comics these days, and I my answer was because...
Shut up, Mom.
My answer was because as we talked a lot about the show, is that I really feel as if the art in comics these days are lacking, and that they're either, you know, typical superhero, Marvel style, DC style, they both have their house styles, you know, kind of typical, you know, what you would expect, or they're so subpar or so digital or all this sort of stuff. And also, nobody was doing anything that was wholly unique in a style. Mm-hmm. But this Akko guy, like, whatever he does next, I am all over.
Like, I agree with you.
Yeah, like yes, it's easy to draw the comparisons to Marcos Martin, but he's doing something beyond just being kind of like Marcos Martin or Pablo Rivera. Like, he's got his own thing going on, and it is good.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And you, as you look through this, there's little things that you find all over the place where he's pushing the barriers of sort of standardized, and I've never heard of this person before.
Right, neither have I.
And I'm getting a lot of, I mean, obviously there's some Steranko in here. There's a lot of things going on. There's Kirby. He's breaking panel borders in a couple of places where it's super interesting. And to be fair, this is a really good stage for him to come out because it's not a heck of a lot of plot. I mean, it was designed for him to draw it like this, it seems. So that's kind of cool, and we don't get that very often, which is why 6 issues, I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I don't need to keep reading this forever.
Yeah, but, it was good. It was a nice little package. You didn't need more.
But I want to know what he does next. So
it was like, can you do for Nick Fury for Fatherhood what you did for Starman, but in 6 issues with no plot? Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, we'll do that. We'll wrap it up easy.
This was great.
So, Ron, last time we talked about Nightwing, the New Order was we both enjoyed it. Did you continue reading it?
Oh yeah, I continued reading it.
So this is, as I'm sure Josh doesn't know because he's been listening to the show, this is a Elseworlds book that is not called an Elseworlds book because DC won't use that title anymore. But it's Nightwing: The New Order in a future, and it's a 6-issue miniseries in a future in which Nightwing has gotten rid of all the superpowers in the world. His son has superpowers, and so
because of what's her face.
Is Starfire.
Starfire, that's right. With the boots.
So Nightwing, so here we have the manifestation of his son's powers. He's going to deal with the fact that he leads this international task force eliminating superheroes, and now his son is one. And I like the still run. I thought the hair continued to be ridiculous still.
Which is great. I think the hair needs to be ridiculous. It's an important part of it. They definitely cut at the heart with what happened with Alfred.
Yes.
That was very painful. We got a little more background into the world that the how it's been created. This is Elseworlds. I love it. I hope they do more of stuff like this. This is just bananas Elseworlds, which, you know, I love. So,
and it looks great. Trevor McCarthy's art's really strong and really fun little story. Yeah, Nightwing story.
Really good. Yeah. Really, really good. So,
Archie 24. Want to check in with Archie. This is the aftermath of the horrible drag racing incident between Archie and Reggie that led to Betty Cooper getting paralyzed. And now I'm having a lot of hard times with comics right now. And the paralyzing of Betty Cooper is near the top. But
I just love Connor comes home and just is he's rubbing his forehead and he's going, this Betty Cooper thing, I just can't take it.
I can't deal with it.
I picture it more like he came home and he went, you know what? I need to escape in these comics. Yeah. Flip, flip, flip. Oh, come on.
That's this kind of too? So the first I thought of you guys as reading this because the very first page is, this issue is all about her, you know, home from the hospital. Yeah. The very first page is her in her wheelchair looking up at the stairs of the school saying, I got this.
Oh, Jesus.
But this issue is all about how the town is adjusting to their favorite daughter being paralyzed and the fundraisers and the tension between the families. They live next door to each other, but now the Coopers won't talk to the Andrews because they hold Archie responsible, even though it wasn't his fault. It was Reggie's fault. Reggie getting arrested, all kinds of things happening as Betty learns to deal with her new life. And she's maybe not as strong as she portrays herself to be. To everybody else. It was a really, you know, nice little issue. I don't know how much longer I'm going to keep going with this book, but I have been enjoying this particular arc, even though it stings me in my heart.
Has he been writing it for 2 years?
Is it monthly? Is it biweekly? I don't even know. I assume so.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Time has no meaning.
Yep. No meaning.
No, that's true.
But yeah, I guess yes.
No, crazy. Real quickly, the Commandy Challenge number 9, a story by Tom King, but art by Kevin Eastman.
Yeah.
That's worth the price of admission alone.
Yeah, I wish somebody had mentioned it beforehand. It looks great.
Yeah, it does. It's black. I mean, it's not truly black and white. And note by the way, it's got inks from Freddie Williams III, which
It's got grayscales.
It's definitely you know, there's a little hints of blue here and there and things like that, but it all takes place inside a cave, so that design, like that look, makes sense for the story. And Tom King did a really great job of kind of paying tribute to Kirby through this in it as well too.
Do we have to tell people who Kevin Eastman is?
Yes,
the co-creator of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, of Maine.
Yeah.
But boy, he still got it.
Really good.
Really. Yeah, it's more impressive than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
So Southern Bastards number 18, it came back for the first time in a while. This one, Jason Latour written, Chris Brunner drawn. I kind of didn't notice.
The team from Loose Ends.
Yeah, exactly.
I totally noticed. I freaked out the first three pages trying to desperately find the title page because I could not believe that Jason Aaron had written it.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought this was way over the top.
Yeah.
And this is an over the top book, but Jason layers a lot of nuance into that. This was like no nuance. When the guy started screaming about Al-Qaeda being in their town, I was like, oh God.
Yeah.
You know what? I think I kind of sense that too, now that I think about it in retrospect. I don't think it necessarily took away from my enjoyment on it, but I think it just bumped on it a little. I was like, that's a thing.
I mean, it's tough because Aaron and Latour as a team with Jason writing it and Latour defining the look of Southern Bastards is very definitive. And even though Latour and Aaron are so close and Latour is a great writer in and of itself, putting Latour and Brunner from Loose Ends together, they have a DNA amongst themselves as creators as well. And, you know, while, you know, Latour, of course, is co-creator of all these characters and worked the story out with Jason, stuff like that, when Jason Aaron's not writing it, you notice it. And I think that's magnified by Latour teaming up with Brunner for the art on it. So it's their book. They do whatever they want with it, but I get it. You know, like, I get Connor. I get where you're coming from. I enjoyed it.
I don't think so.
I think they're probably. I have no idea. I'll ask Jason. I'm actually going to see Jason this weekend, so I'll ask him.
This is, you know, Jason.
I do know Jason.
You hadn't mentioned. It's interesting because this is part 4 of a storyline.
Right.
Yeah.
I think
I think they're doing what they have to given the schedule issue with Latour's father passing and all that stuff. So yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Fair enough.
Yep.
Fair enough. I did not enjoy it. I was happy to see it back. It hasn't been in my stack for 2. It made me worried. I went, oh right, they have to get this out. That's no small thing. So
I'm glad they're getting back to the Earl story. I mean, I enjoy the stuff with the coach and all that stuff, but I'm glad that now we've got her on the scene and it seems like she's happening. So yeah.
Overall, I liked the story it was told. I just didn't necessarily like the way it was told, but I did like the idea that Earl wasn't this patron saint that we saw in the first couple of it, or the first issue, you know, that he was an asshole too. So it makes everything, you know, muddier in a world that's pretty muddy already.
Very muddy. But, no, it's also muddy. The patron pick voting.
Those are the books we're going to talk about. Patron pick happens every week at patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can vote. Every patron can vote on the pick every week. And this week was a tight race, guys. We had came down to the wire. The second place book crawled to the top. It almost caught the first place book, but it didn't work. The winner was DuckTales number one from IDW, written by Joe Caramagna. And there's two stories here.
It was great to see Joe writing and not. And I know he's been writing. I haven't read anything Joe's written, but we've enjoyed his lettering for years. So it's great to see him branching out to writing.
Yeah. So he's done some indie comics. He's done some sort of you know, like kids stuff. Yeah. Like, you know, where they put them over on the young reader kind of stuff. And this sort of is in that vein. But, yeah, it was well done.
A lot of Italian names here. You know, I don't know how I feel about that, Ron.
No, here's the thing. I like it. I like this. I love I'm an unabashed DuckTales lover and fan. Yep. I watched DuckTales originally as a kid. I love Darkwing Duck. We all know friend of the show, Tad Stones, creator of Darkwing Duck, is the one of the best people around. I love Uncle Scrooge. I love Donald. I love Huey, Dewey, and Louie. I love Launchpad. I love the whole gang. I couldn't be happier that they're back as a cartoon. This comic, I really liked it. And Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck, I have fond memories as a child in Italy reading Uncle Scrooge comics in Italian. Not Topo Gigio, but what was it? Because that's Mickey Mouse, but... There's a Disney Italian comics connection that's been around for years.
Panini.
Yeah, Panini, exactly. And so if they're picking up any of these artists from Panini, then or they just happen to be Italian artists, who gives a shit? But so like that kind of triggered that for me. It was a good, you know, good kind of memories. Zio Paparone. That's what Uncle Scrooge in Italian was.
Say it again.
Zio Paparone. I remember reading those comics when we were in Italy. It was great. I was in 1982. It was wonderful.
So. Two things I can't let go here. One, you kind of made it sound like you grew up in Italy, which you didn't. two, we catch Ron for this every time, but I'd like to point out that Connor just pronounced it Caramagna, which, do you have lasagna a lot? Or...
Yes, I do.
Caramagna.
I don't think you do, sir.
Caramagna. Zio Paparone, written by Joe Caramagna.
This is okay.
I loved it. I have criticisms,
but
yeah.
It wasn't really DuckTales. It was more just Donald Duck.
That was my big complaint, was that it was Donald and the nephews, and the next issue teases Uncle Scrooge. I wanted Duckburg. I wanted Uncle Scrooge. That's what
I've read a lot of the Carl Barks Ducks books. I love those books. So it's hard to compare to the, because, you know, he's an all-time legend, so it's hard to compare. Agreed. I mean, obviously this is pale in comparison, but I try not to do that. However, this read like those Donald Duck comics, because it was Donald Duck and his nephews doing adventures. Yep. DuckTales, to me, is very specifically Huey, Dewey, and Louie, Launchpad, and Uncle Scrooge. Donald Duck wasn't even in the cartoon.
You know what's funny is that, like, when I was a kid, I always wanted DuckTales to be this.
Right.
Because I really like the Donald Duck cartoons. Those are my favorite out of all those sort of shorts from the era. So when I was reading, I thought the same thing. I was like, this isn't DuckTales really. But also I was like, I always liked these when I was a kid, so I was kind of okay with it.
It was a weird branding thing. Yeah, it was totally fun. And as comics, if it had said Donald Duck on the cover, I would have been like, this is terrific. It just was weird that you call it DuckTales and you don't have specifically two of the main characters and, as Ron said, the setting. Whereas the old Donald Duck comics, they were globetrotting adventurers like happened here.
Right. It's a duck blur.
Totally.
Danger.
But it was fun. I mean, the art was really strong. Yeah. Josh, this passed your all-ages comics test?
Yeah, I thought this was really good and well done. I liked that the art wasn't... it wasn't just them doing Carl Barks or staying on Disney model. Like, it didn't look exactly like the cartoon. It had a little bit of...
But we don't know if it looks like the new cartoon, because none of us have seen that, right?
Maybe. That's possible.
I've seen things where I haven't watched it yet. I'm going home to my sister's this weekend. I hope to check it out on the Disney Channel. But, yeah.
Is it on Netflix?
Is it on Netflix? I have no idea. It definitely looks like the style of the new cartoon, which is fine, as it should. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, it was fine. It was good. I would read this to my kids and see if if they liked it, which
it seemed never very good for kids. Definitely seemed good for kids. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right, ratings.
Give it 3.5.
I'm gonna give it a 4.5 only because it was missing Uncle Scrooge and Duckburg.
I'm gonna actually go with Connor on 3.5.
All right.
Sticking with it.
Zio. No, I'm probably not gonna read it. No, I'm not gonna stick with it. I'm just being honest. I'm sorry. These are kids' comics.
Yeah.
I mean, they're great. I mean, but like there's no continuity, right? You know, like all that sort of stuff.
So. It's not. Yeah. It's not helping you answer the great questions of life.
Well, I just want to know how much money is in that vault. And if this comic is going to tell me that, then I'll read it. If it's not, then what are you going to do?
Really? That's the thing?
The lucky dime.
Are you surprised?
No.
Josh, are you sticking with it?
No. Same reason you. Boy, that is one Italian bunch of names at the top, though. I don't know why you're not sticking with it just because of that.
Luca Yusai, Giuseppe Fontana. Oh, Giuseppe Fontana. Gianfranco Florio and Giuseppe Fontana and Dario Calabria. I like it.
All right. So patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can vote every week on the patron pick to add a book to the rundown. Thank you very much.
Zio Paperon. Topolino. That's what it was called. Topolino was the comics I would read.
Topo Gigio was from It's All Over Here.
Yeah, no, but Topolino was the line of comics that I got when I was in Italy growing up.
What Ted Adams said was, I want to smell the olive oil coming off the masthead.
That's not.
Smell the olive oil.
You guys, that's a very specific film reference for any of you out there. And it's these not that two. These two old people here know what I'm talking about. And for anybody else, that's a bonus. And if not, well, sorry.
Topolino. Ron, that wasn't Italy. That was Mulberry Street.
Yeah, Topolino. All right, let's go. Moving on.
So every week on patreon.com/ifanboy, in addition to joining up and getting the vote in the patron pick and joining on other things, you get a power, superpower, a dumb superpower, maybe a cool superpower, a superpower nonetheless. So that's how we like to thank our patrons, by giving them a little fun superpower. Last week you guys talked about, are we over the hump?
In what sense? We're never over the hump.
You guys mentioned that we had more behind us than in front of us in terms of these superpowers.
Oh, that might be accurate. I haven't looked at it in that context, but that might be accurate.
Anyway, let's start off thanking Howard, the mysteriously one named Howard. Howard's superpower is that, and you guys will know what I'm talking about here. Howard's superpower is that he disrupts all technology.
Is that little fat boy you, Connor?
Yeah, he's got a little bubble around him. Things don't work.
I just killed right. Ron.
The internet doesn't work right. His computer doesn't work right. His phone's never. It just everything is all fucked up.
I can't wait for your second power this week.
Oh man. Oh, that was good.
Oh. Wow. That was another reference to a 30-plus-year-old movie.
Yeah, there it is.
I'm also not going to explain.
Oh, God Almighty! All right, we want to thank Max Shannon.
And cool Max, name. Sounds like a PI.
That's
from the
a great
80s.
Name. Unfortunately, his power is that he has a constant sinus infection, but instead of snot, it's gold. it's liquid gold.
That's so stupid.
That is stupid. Where does it come from?
I don't know. Just go, when it hits, bolting? Like the thing is, like, he can have days and where he's fine or whatever, but then the right kind of thing happens and, oh, I got a sinus infection again, and he wipes his nose and it's just liquid gold.
Is it molten? Does it burn him as it comes down?
It's not hot, but it is molten, and then as soon as it comes in contact with a tissue or a receptacle of some sort, then it hardens and just becomes gold.
This gold is great, but it's full of Kleenex.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, when metal, when you get some solder onto the paper towel, and you can, it's kind of like that. But
how often do you solder?
I back in Italy, I used to solder all the time.
You were just about to go, I solder. And I was like, please say it.
Are
the richest man in the world?
I haven't soldered in a while, but I have soldered.
My soldering iron is just out of arm's reach here.
I learned how to solder. I did. Back in the 90s when I was fixing computers.
Oh, from computers. Yeah. I built RC cars as a kid.
Yeah. So Max Shannon is the richest man in the world then.
I mean, also in pain because he's got a sinus infection that just won't go away. I mean, he can be if he does it correctly, like if he knows how to use this power for good, then yeah. So
got to tell you, that's an expensive antibiotic to take.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's the risk. So, yeah.
Wealth or pain?
Wealth or pain? That's a big question. For a second, I thought you were making up a name. You were telling me a name of some villain from something.
Oh, God. Good stuff.
My goodness. The criminal behind this all is wealth or pain.
It's a very Eddie Izzard thing. Wealth or pain. Cake or death.
Right. Moving on. Marianne Borelli. And apologies for the Italian comments earlier. Marianne Borelli. Han Solo may not want her to tell him the odds, but she always can. She always knows the odds. What? Instantly, she can assess the situation and knows what the odds are.
Oh, interesting.
That's a good power.
Should we do this, Marianne? 4 in 5 shots, pretty good.
Yep.
Interesting.
You can rely on that data from her.
Cool.
That's a good power.
That's a good one, yeah.
Philip Ricketts. Philip wins every award he's nominated for.
Wow, but he's got to be nominated. That's the thing.
The trick is getting nominated.
Right.
That's
right. Yeah, that's a good one.
If he were somehow to be nominated for Best Actor in a Motion Picture, he would win.
If he could only break into the filmmaking biz.
But he has to be good enough to get nominated in the first place. That's the trick.
Right. Yeah.
So now a sweepstakes then wouldn't count. It has to be an award that has a nomination process.
Correct. He has to be nominated for an award. Every award he's nominated for.
What if he gets one of those spam messages? It's like you've been nominated for so and so, but it's really just a real estate scam.
He's gonna win.
He somehow wins it, and they're all like, "What the fuck?"
There's no money.
This wasn't real.
That's my favorite part of it. That just happened.
Yeah, so there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks for being patrons, Howard, Max, Marianne, and Philip.
All right.
There you go.
Love the patrons. All right, on to your email. We got an email from Jody W. who says, just want to say thanks. Your timing is impeccable. It always is. See, Jody knows. I just received an Amazon Kindle and was looking for some decent black and white comics to read on my new favorite gadget. And behold, the Cerebus cast. Okay. I dabbled in comics in the 90s, Marvel and Image, and came back to comics with the New 52 and Valiant relaunches. I downloaded Cerebus Volumes 1 and 2 from Dave Sims' website, and I'm loving it. Planning on picking up Volume 3 and 4 at once. Also downloaded my favorite Jeff Lemire graphic novels to the Kindle. Congratulations, Jody. Any other black and white stuff you'd recommend? Sure. Let's go around the horn. Josh, you go first. What name one black and white book you would recommend.
But you should go for any of Alex Robinson's work, specifically Box Office Poison, which after you read Cerebus, you will absolutely see a connection to that,
yeah.
As he's a big Cerebus fanboy, but also extremely talented in his own right.
Yeah. Connor, black and white comic.
Bone.
Correct answer. Well done. Why?
Why? It's good.
All right.
It's a classic. It's an epic in the same way that Cerebus is an epic.
Yeah. It's great adventure. It's totally good. And then I will recommend my go-to with Strangers in Paradise by Terry Moore, which is black and white, fantastic relationship drama. And I'll throw a bonus one in there for you with Love and Rockets. So
I also had a bonus, and it would be the 80s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yes. That was going to be my bonus.
Good one. Well, Connor, what's your bonus now?
God damn it. Sin City.
Sin City? Nice. All right, and there's also Batman Black and White if you want superheroes.
That's true.
So there it is. Lots of black and white comics out there for you. So many. It's fantastic. Let's do one more.
Josh from Paw Hatchet, which I Googled because I wanted to add the state and didn't get any hits on. So I don't know if this is what
really
the deal
sounds like Rhode Island.
Josh from Paw Hatchet. This popped into my head at 4:01 p.m. while listening to Ron and Josh in the Star Wars Corner of episode 603. How about a spinoff podcast 15 to 20 minutes long titled Star Wars Corner?
Go screw.
All right. If you've got a question, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We love to hear from you. Be sure to let us know who you are, where you're from, and how long you've been thinking about it. And please keep it brief and to the point. We thank everyone, even Josh from Paw Hatchet, if you exist.
We didn't plan that, but I feel like I was set up.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Okay. Booksplode was our show about books. We were just referencing it before, but you should go back in the feed and you should listen to it. We talked about Cerebus Volume 3, which is Church and State Part 1. Yeah, I know that's confusing, but you should listen to it and read it anyway, even if you haven't done all that stuff. Special guest Alex Robinson, Synergy. We invited on to help give us some context on Dave Simmons' Cerebus, and it was the most enjoyable Booksplode I think we've done in quite a while.
And I just
also
got
a hell of a book.
I got book two arrived this week. I'm very excited book to four. Read it.
Church and State.
Volume four, book two.
Yeah.
Men and X-Men. Also, behind this show, you can find the Star Trek Discovery / the Orville podcast, in which me and Ron and our buddy Mike Romo super nerded out for about an hour about Star Trek Discovery and the Orville. Also things we nerded out about. Sound equipment, Disney, fonts. There was lots of nerding out happening on that show. It's a fun show. If you watch Star Trek Discovery, if you watch The Orville, check it out behind the show on the feed. And then coming soon, next week sometime, I hope, there will be another special edition show on The Inhumans pilot, which has just aired, and The Gifted, which just will be airing this week as well. So we'll be doing that show coming up soon, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Exciting time. Are you ever going to see The Kingsman?
Moving on to the October Patreon is this week.
Yes, you patrons out there, take note. Our October patron hangout is going to be early this month, October 2nd at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. That's Monday. That's immediately the day after this podcast comes out. So we'll post on Patreon so all you guys know. But yeah, please join us on October 2nd for what will be another fun patron hangout where I believe we're going to be doing our Star Wars fantasy draft, correct?
We are, and we need to figure the rules out before the Patreon hangout.
Yeah, I was going to Connor. You and I need to talk about the Josh, not so much, but Connor, you know, I have ideas. I have ideas. So.
Okay, right, okay. Cool. But that will be happening. We'll be doing the Star Wars fantasy draft, as mentioned, two shows ago.
I actually have a larger vision for this that I'm really looking forward to sharing with you.
Oh no! All right. So, okay. If you're a patron, come hang out and check it out. If you want to see that conversation, join the patron. You can do it for a buck.
Yeah, I have a strong feeling that the Star Wars fantasy draft and my big idea for the season will be a patron hangout only thing. So if you want to get in on that action, become a patron.
Okay.
Yeah, I hope I can take part. Head over to ifanboy.com. You'll find all of our other podcasts. And you can go to facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out and some other little stuff here and there. And when we put shows up and things like that, keep you abreast of what's going on. And you can, of course, follow us individually. J.A. Flanagan and Ronixo on Twitter and Instagram and C.S. Kilpatrick over on Instagram are the places.
And if you like the show, write us a review on iTunes. That's how people find podcasts. And better than that is to tell your friends about our show. Introduce your moms to the podcast, your comic store, anywhere you think the podcast might be. Find a nice home. Find us a nice home.
And let's not forget what we said last week. Subscribe to that feed.
That's right, the feed.
Yeah, listen, if your friend leaves their phone on the bar and go to the bathroom, open up their podcast app and subscribe to the feed.
I used to do that in Apple stores, like when we first started the show.
Yeah.
I just subscribed their Mac to our show.
And maybe that's why we're paying the price 12 years later.
Might be.
Listen, just subscribe to that feed. That's all I'm saying.
This'll work.
Also, if you work at a bar and you have an iPod that plays music, yeah, right, or a phone.
Just subscribe to the feed.
Subscribe to the feed. Yeah. Or play the show over at the bar. I'm sure people would love it.
Yeah.
The hell is this?
Especially at sports bars on Sundays. Do that.
They love that.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for this week's show. Thank you for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Josh. Good night, everyone at the bar. I'm sorry.
Try the wings. No castration, no highway, freeway, motorway, no bus, no bus, no rain, no train, no bus, no bus, no rain, no train, no bus, no bus, no
train. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.